podcast where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us as we try to figure out why everything exists.
And I'm your host, Sam Acuff.
There's Sam Acuff, aka my date for this evening, and I am Baron Malley. What are your intentions with me, Sam?
It doesn't matter. You already told me you don't sleep on the first date.
I don't.
Yeah.
Which is I was crazy. Hoping you'd have something more pure than that.
It's fucking 2021, but, man. Just let your freak flag fly.
I'm stuck in the 50s, baby. You want this prime rib? You got to put some gold on that pinky.
That fingy?
I want to see it sparkle, baby.
Oh, God. Yeah, so what are we doing today?
These are dirty bits for the Dice episode that you listened to and
fucking
you enjoyed.
Loved. You loved it so much you listened to the dirty bits.
And now here we are.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, Dirty Bits, if you're listening to us for the first time or listening to a Dirty Bits for the first time, this is where we share all the extra information that didn't make it to the normal, more formal scripts that we share on our normal episodes.
Like a Tinder date gone wrong. Or gone right.
No. Whatever, I mean, because then you're putting it out there that the normal episode didn't go well, but the normal episode did go well.
Oh.
This is really hard to make an analogy to a Tinder date.
Is this the second date? Is that what we're saying?
This is the next morning where you are trying to figure out how to sneak out of the house, but also if you're comfortable leaving them in your house, or if you just have to make breakfast with them, or you like them and you got to get coffee, but then it's like, do you want to be too forward? And also, why did they spend the night? That's weird for our first time sleeping together. Like, go home.
I just know I'm waking their asses up by singing karaoke in the shower.
Yep.
Welcome to La La Land.
Ladies. Is it karaoke if it's you in the shower?
Yeah.
You're just singing. Normal people just say it's singing in the shower.
You know, yeah, to find out the answer to that, you are going to have to listen to the eventual karaoke infocast.
Or
episode.
Sleep with Baron. Those are your options.
If you can get me.
So do you want to start? Because I know you have more than I do.
I could throw one out there. I'm going to talk about a man named Archie Karas.
Oh.
You might know this person if you listen to the first episode of, or the...
The only episode.
Yeah, the only episode of
our
Dice.
Nice episode.
In which he was mentioned in our opening story.
We're not drunk.
Not yet. Not yet. So the man known as Archie Karas, a.k.a. the Greek, is known as one of the greatest craps players to ever roll bones across the felt table. Anagyros Karaborneiotis, I guess, was born in Archie Karas. That's his original Greek name.
It just sounds like you tried to hex me.
He was born in Greece in 1950 under the shadow of his father, who was a construction worker, mm-hmm. also in Greece. Greek or not, we can see how a great deal of what would lead to Archie's eventual rise and fall was shaped by how his childhood went down. And by that, I'm talking about his father, Nicholas. His work was centered around construction in poor villages. And although it was probably a very worthwhile endeavor, and he was probably, I don't know if he was like a humanitarian in that sense, or if he was just living in poor areas and that was the work that he had available. But
wait, how did this guy come out named like Ukka Shukka Mukka, and the dad was Nicholas?
I don't know how Greek works, man.
The crazy name skip a generation.
Yeah, yeah, that's possible. Yeah. That's possible. Anyway, Archie's family was very poor. Archie's father was a construction worker. He had regular work, also very poor, though, because he wasn't making a lot of profits because he was in this poor area.
All right, things so far are hard for Archie.
Archie's having a hard time. So Archie, even as a small child, he turns to shooting marbles for money at a very young age. Apparently that was, I don't know exactly what, I don't know what shooting marbles is. I never played marbles.
It sounds like what the gang from 50 Goes West does for money. Like it doesn't sound... It's like a cute version of shooting like bones in the alley.
So Archie played with all of his rat friends in the alley.
Yeah.
They all gambled for for marbles, whatever.
The good thing about losing your money to mice is they're easy to kill to get your money back.
Archie said about those days, back in those days, we would play for drachmas, which was the currency then. It took 30 drachmas to make $1. So to win 2.5 drachmas, it meant I could win half a loaf of bread to avoid going hungry that day.
Fuck.
He was pretty poor. Archie did not take to construction like his father, and this eventually led to a falling out between them, leading Archie to leave home at the age of 15.
Dad, you don't support me. You'll see, I'm gonna be a marble champion. You'll all see.
If you leave now, Archie, you can never come back.
I guess this one's for all the marbles then.
So, Archie spends the next 2 years making money as a waiter on luxury cruise ships.
He gives up on marbles.
You get, well...
Not for long.
Well, marbles, yes, but we can see how
marbles is also incredibly hard to play on a cruise ship.
So. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to see Archie developed a bit of a gambling habit, which we're going to talk about. So, Archie spends... 2 years on a cruise ship.
Does this story get better?
For the most part.
Okay. He's at like 12, right?
No, he's like 17.
As a stowaway on a cruise ship.
He's 17. He's got a job.
His only skills are shooting marbles.
The
girl he likes is like, so what are you good at? It's not important. Nothing. There's a different life.
Show me.
I can't. It's not ship friendly.
Archie touches down in Oregon 2 years later, makes his way down to L.A., finds another job working as a waiter down in Los Angeles, and spends his free time at the pool hall adjacent to the restaurant where he worked.
Bigger marbles.
They are pretty much bigger marbles, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Archie eventually starts making more money hustling pool games than he was at waiting tables. And if we know anything from the Music Man musical, when pool gets involved, that becomes a gateway to higher stakes gambling, such as poker.
Man, Archie, why are you so good at pool? Man, it's just like marbles. What? Nothing.
Throughout his 20s and 30s, Archie rode the wave of the rise and fall of his luck and skill at the poker table. One day, he would be driving around in a luxury car. The next, he would find himself sleeping inside of it. He would just gain fortunes and then just lose them. Mm-hmm. In very quick time spans. When out of money, Archie would find another backer until he worked his way to the top again, until that money also dwindled as well. This gambling addiction tied itself in with the endorphin rush he must have felt every time he won, probably associated with what he must have felt as a child winning money for food. We can see that this is what shaped all of his behavior and motivations from that point forward. In December of 1992, after losing a whopping $2 million at the poker table and being left with only $50 to his name, Archie decides that the best course of action at this point is to head for Vegas to see if he can win his fleeting fortune back. Ding, ding, ding. Idea. Head for Vegas.
Hey, man. At that point, what else are you going to do with $50?
Buy food, maybe?
Nah, that's stupid.
I don't know. So Archie asks a friend for a $10,000 loan to play in a high-stakes Vegas poker game.
So he needed more money than 50. So
yeah.
The 50 doesn't...
Yeah. But the 50, I guess, got him to Vegas. You know,
it got him a bus ticket. It got him close enough to his friend to ask for money.
Yeah. Pretty much. So Archie takes this $10,000, he takes it to the poker table, and he triples that in only 3 hours. However, poker did not multiply his funds fast enough for Archie's taste. This is what drives Archie deeper into what is known famously in crap shooting history as the run. After brokering with the Binion's Horseshoe Casino owner for $100,000 rolls, which was unheard of sum before that. Like, nobody was rolling that much for that much money.
Per roll?
Ever, yeah.
So he just, like, convinced them. He's like, hey, let's make these larger rolls.
Yeah, it happened more than just, like, you know, over the span of an hour or so. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he rolled into this casino, and everybody knew he had, like, this huge wad, you know, that he was ready to spend on gambling. But he kept holing up inside of his hotel room eating steak until, and like haggling with the owner over a course of a few days. Like the owner would come up, okay, you can have like $7,000 rolls.
That's fucking, and he's smart, like, no. Because you're going to get treated like royalty if you got a wad, but if you blow it the first day, he was milking it.
He knew what it was known.
He who has the wad has the power.
Yeah, yeah. Over the years.
I'm tired of playing these flat marbles with the numbers on them.
Oh, poker?
I want to roll the square marbles. Can we make that happen?
So he brokers with the casino owner to finally able to get these $100,000 rolls, and Archie manages with these rolls, he manages to turn his poker winnings that he had into a tune of $40 million.
Jeez.
In fact, he shut out the casino. He shut down the casino for a certain amount of time. And it's also one of the longest winning streaks in crap history.
Jesus.
Craps. Not crap history. Craps history.
Craps history.
And over the years, unfortunately, Archie's gambling addiction gets the better of him.
No. What? I thought this was the end of the story. And it was good.
There's, yeah.
You're telling me he continues to gamble and loses more money?
I wish he rode off into the sunset with his $40 million and... invests in lots of stocks and is very secure and happy, but unfortunately he hits a losing streak at the craps because he keeps on gambling.
The crabs table or the craps table?
Craps.
Craps, okay.
Yeah, crabs is a different game.
It's a different game.
So Archie hits a losing streak with craps, and then he tries other games like baccarat, which I don't know that much about, but unfortunately the bad luck followed him until Archie becomes penniless and destitute. He had a few mini streaks after that, even making $4 million at poker in a casino outside of Vegas years later, until he lost it all the next day. What I would give for just $1 million.
But Baron, what you're not...
I will never see $1 million in my life.
No, you won't. But to put it in perspective, if you don't mind, we would have never been at this point of the story if he didn't follow those same instincts in the first place.
No, sure.
You got to take it good with the bad. Like, he would have never saw $1 million if he wasn't so bad at knowing when to stop.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously he had a problem too, but...
Yep, I... Depending on when you decided to stop this story, sometimes he has a solution. You know, it's you see problem, I see a, you know, just a guy that hasn't figured it out yet.
I think what is interesting about this to me is that he obviously gambling had more of an importance to him because he formed that association of like, I need to gamble in order to eat, you know, when he was a child. So there must have been, on top of all the endorphin rushes,
but then
that
he also had a job.
Yeah,
so he understood that there's a world outside of gambling.
Yeah, sure, but you know,
he just had a problem.
The neural connections that you make in your head when you're a kid, you know,
but I don't think he was sitting there on his wad like, if I don't gamble, I don't eat. Like, no,
but I think that was in the back of his head subconsciously.
No, I think he liked to win.
Well, that too. Yeah,
I think that's what all gamblers like. They like to win. I'm not fucking on the brink of going destitute, and I actively stay away from the scenarios that would feed my less favorable qualities, but I have a bit of a, not a, a gambling problem, but I overdo it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. I went to Atlantic City one time and that's it.
Talked about gambling.
Cause never. I don't partake in it, which is, I think is like what makes me not have it. Like, that's why I can't say I have an addiction, cause I don't seek it out. But like, if it's around, I just fucking, I'm all in. We're a sympathetic to gambling podcast. Where if you were gonna recommend this to somebody with a gambling problem, don't, because we don't know what we're talking about, and we're just gonna be a couple of enablers. Well, so is this how the story ends? Did Archie die penniless, clutching
Archie's still alive? He did get arrested.
Keeps getting better.
he gets arrested for like 17 days, I think. He gets thrown in jail for 17 days, and now he's blacklisted from casinos everywhere because they caught him in San Diego marking cards with poker chips marked with die.
Huh? How's that work?
I don't know exactly. I didn't look super deep into it.
He sucks at it. We know that.
apparently. So, but he's still alive.
It's the sticky chips situation.
Yeah, I don't think he's homeless or anything. You know, there's very little information on what he's doing like right
Archie,
now.
Archie, if you listen to the podcast, how are you doing? Reach out.
Yeah, send us
shoot
an
us
email.
A DM or an email. Just, you know, let us know. Did we tell your story well? I feel like this was one of the people that we covered that we could actually talk to. Because if he's like a waiter on a cruise ship or something, what else is he fucking doing? he can't be gambling. He's been blacklisted.
That was Archie Caras.
I have a quick dirty bit.
Okay.
I was interested into, you know, we pretty much tried our best to pinpoint when dice were invented, and I think we did a pretty terrible job. I think we did a great telling of the lineage of dice, but I think it's pretty hard to tell when dice proper, like dice how we think of it, almost impossible even of when they even started. But I thought maybe it'd be easier to pinpoint when loaded dice were first used. Because I'm obviously was just as interested in like when people started cheating with dice. And as it would turn out, nope, just as hard to figure out when that started. Because it happened so long ago that people were making loaded dice back when dice were still made out of wood.
Yeah, well, you know, human nature and all that. You know, people cheating, people going cheat.
So
you know?
Long as there's a game where it's dictated by fate, there's going to be people that try to manage that outcome of their fate, you know. I mean, why not? There's always cheaters. That is the takeaway. But what I did find interesting is, I was unsatisfied with finding out anything about maybe when there was a historical recollection of the first loaded die, like maybe even something in mythology. But nah. But what I did find was early methods of how people made loaded die. Like now it's like weighted, like you know. If you've ever watched like Ocean's 11, people will cast dies that are weighted to one side, yada yada. Like it gets more technical. Back in the day, people would try to, at least this is what I read, people would grow, like if a tree grew around a pebble or like a rock, they would cut that piece of wood out and carve the die out of that piece of wood so that the favorable number was the opposite side of the pebble that's embedded in the wood.
How long do you have to search around for the exact right tree? It's the long con, man.
Things took longer back in the day. later versions were like they used like wax and mercury inside.
I didn't know about mercury.
Yeah, so they would use because you could warm up the mercury or the wax with your hand so that it would melt, and then like I guess that one I think you have more autonomy over the outcome, whereas like the pebble one, you just gotta hope you always need a six. Like, this is my six die, and this is my three die. And I guess you can get an edge that way. But with the mercury and the wax is inside the die. And because they have such low melting points, you can use your hands to melt it. And then I guess the way that you hold it is, like, you grip it so tight that it starts to melt. And then you hold the die in a way that it's positioned in how you'd want it to land so that when the wax or the mercury solidifies again, it's on the opposite side of the, you know, it's in the position that you'd want it to roll in at the end. So I think that's pretty clever. Oh, I was
so
pretty into that.
It solidifies like while it's in mid roll. Cause I was thinking like, how do you stop while you're holding rolling it. Around it, rolling around while you throw the die?
You well, know? You, it solidifies again. This happens fast. Like if you've ever seen like pure mercury or like, you know, just like really soft wax, like you can, I mean, it takes a little bit of time, but it can happen in real time. You know, like you think like you're in a crowd, everyone's got their own die, they're shooting like in an alley or something, like they're playing craps like unofficially, and you're just like holding the dice in your hand, warming it, and then you're looking at them like, all right, well, I want this and this, and these numbers face upward, and then you like don't grip it as tight, you let the wax solidify again in the position you want, and then those dice are loaded for that game. At least that's how it was interpreted in the, I don't fucking know. I've never used wax or mercury rolling dice. If anyone out there that I've ever won money from is listening, I've never done that. So I have no idea how it works.
It's like that Lethal Weapon movie, Loaded Dice.
What?
It's like that Mel Gibson movie, Loaded Dice.
You got it. I watched an excerpt from The Patriot the other day. And that's the other thing. Hey, anyone that's listening for the first time, Dirty Bits has a little bit of stream of consciousness in it. And I remember watching The Patriot as a kid. Obviously, now there's all these like fucking connotations to what Patriots even are, and people, you know.
Is that a Seagal movie?
No, it's a Mel Gibson movie.
Oh.
He directed it and he starred in it.
Okay.
And I remember watching it in middle school, like in class, like our history professor, our history teacher showed us The Patriot. And we were all fucking, we loved it. Like, it was, we ate it up. I watched it again. It's pretty fucking ridiculous. It's a pretty silly movie.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I don't know that much about it, but
Yeah.
Also, Mel Gibson's a piece of shit. Not a patriot at all.
Well, I mean, depending on who you're asking, he's either a huge patriot or or a piece of shit. But we try not to be political on the podcast.
The Bible refers to the cruel use of lots being used to determine who would get the clothes of Jesus as he hung from the cross. In fact, the idea of lots does not have a sparkling reputation throughout the dregs of history. Lots refers to a specific form of gambling, also known as cleromancy, involving the use of randomized cards to achieve much the same effect rolling a dice would.
Ah.
I'm going somewhere with this.
And though, if you listen to dice, we learn that mancy is the prediction of futures by way of...
Right.
And I guess clero means cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So divine the future by cards or... Mm-hmm. You know, there's looser interpretations of mancy, which just means like witchcraft or like Arch, like a necromancer.
Archie was sort of a practitioner of marble mancy.
Right. Right. This is where we can bridge the connection, though, because lots and dice have not only been the determination of who gets your clothes when you die, but who lives or dies to begin with. So there's a specific form of military punishment referred to as decimation, or removal of a tenth, that very much relied on the randomization of numbers via lots or the rolling of die.
Was it like a 0 to 10 or like a 1 to 10 situation?
Stay tuned. Find out.
All right. I can't wait. I'm in
decimation probably began before this point, but is made famous in ancient Roman armies as a punishment for soldiers. So when a whole platoon of soldiers makes an unsuccessful attempt at mutiny or attempts to desert or underperforms in battle, as one article put it, you couldn't just kill all of them. That was a waste.
Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So if your squad sucked in battle, losing to, let's say, the barbarian butt lickers, for instance, and now you're pissed off because you have to go to report to the emperor that the butt lickers are still out there licking butts, right? Instead of killing all of your troops, you might as well just set an example and take out 10th of your troops and kill them instead. So to do this, you would divide your squads up into groups of 10, and you would make each group all draw lots or roll dice. And whoever gets the unlucky number or the short straw, well, there are things that could have happened, but being bludgeoned to death by the rest of the soldiers in the group was definitely one of these.
Sounds like it was pretty cool to be a Roman soldier.
That's decimation.
Also,
yeah.
That makes that. You know what? That never mind. That makes sense. If your army loses, you want less soldiers afterwards, right? That's gonna make you a bet. That's gonna make the army better.
They had interesting ideas on how to deal with the psychological.
I mean, I can't. I mean, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. They obviously, you know, they were an empire for so long, and they are credited with having some of the best armies in history. So what the fuck do I know? But I just feel like if the Baltimore Ravens lost a game and you just killed four of them, you're going to have a harder time winning the next fucking game.
So this was practiced even up to World War I.
Shut the fuck up.
Nope. One Italian chief of staff, Luigi Cordogna, was an awful strategist, killing more than 250,000 soldiers in his quest to gain ill-conceived marks on the map. Not only did he suck at strategy, but any time his soldiers would argue with him about his shitty strategy or fail to win the day, it was decimation by firing squad time.
He sucked at war because he killed the wrong people.
Yeah.
It's like when I was...
Yeah, but he blamed it on his soldiers. And then he inflicted decimation.
It's like when I played for the YMCA when I was like 8 and I scored on the wrong basket playing basketball.
You should have been... They should have made you roll the dice.
In Italy, they would have made me fucking president.
Fascists are an interesting bunch, you know? They have come up with some very unique ways of doing things. That's all I got to say.
You'll never tell them that they don't.
or else you're going to have to roll the dice. Anyway, so that was basically, that was my bit on decimation. There was a little bit more. It was in use in the Swedish judicial system for hundreds of years.
I did see that, actually. Yeah. It's funny, when I started research for the actual episode, I saw a bunch of stuff about really like Norwegian, Scandinavian, Swedish, like that. Drawing lots was huge in the judicial system in all of those countries for different periods. Countries, regions, whatever.
Yeah.
And I bookmarked it and I never went back to it, and I didn't realize it until like a little bit before we were doing this recording, and I regret not doing it because I had some interesting shit that like highlighted in that article. But yeah, that's crazy. But honestly, if you think about it, would it be that much worse than the current judicial system our country works with right now?
I mean that's a very controversial opinion.
It would
probably
come out in justice would be served at a higher ratio than it is now if we left it up to chance.
Sure. But would it be the right justice for the right people?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Like justice. because God justice, would sort them out, right? Because that was the whole thing, is like if you roll,
God's dead, they rolled dice to get his clothes. You said that yourself.
Well, there's that, but also but also like that was the basis for a lot of that judicial system, was that if, like, especially they did it a lot for witch trials, that sort of thing. So if you rolled the dice and you rolled the right number, you went free. God loves you. You're not a witch. So,
well, you know, you got to take the good with the bad. You know, so, I'm sorry, some witches got to burn if it means that some cops are going to actually get persecuted for killing unarmed people.
Whoa, did somebody just get political in here?
No, wow. We're talking about dice. Waka waka.
Or also, if any politicians who incited insurrection.
We know. He should be drawn and quartered. We know.
There's a lot of people that should be.
Most of them.
Fuck Ted Cruz, too. He's a piece of
shit. Yeah, we know, Baron. We know. He sucks. But
he's a real four on the dice. I hate four. I hate the number four.
That's cool, I guess. Is that in your Tinder profile? I think that's like,
I don't like the way
that's like such a metal fucking scenario too, like betting on Jesus's clothes as he's fucking. I'm not that cynical and like angsty high school kid that I'm like, yeah, man, fucking Jesus dying. But like, kind of, you know.
I don't know.
Shooting craps to win Jesus's robe, like that's fucking. That could be a song.
I don't know the, well, it was just drawing lots, so I guess whoever drew the short straw or whoever drew from the,
is that what that
cards
was?
Yeah.
Imagine getting bludgeoned to death because fucking Mark drew the shortest straw.
That's lots, baby. That's dice, you know? Somebody's gotta be bludgeoned to death.
Hey Baron, guess what?
What?
I have another dirty bit, you ready?
Okay.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about Egyptians in the last episode. The dice proper episode, and we talked about how dice were kind of used in gaming, and even though those games kind of had like this divine connotation to them, we're talking about Senet specifically, which the basis of the game was you had a piece, the other person had a piece, or you had pieces rather, I think it was like 22 pieces each, and you were trying to get your pieces to go to heaven or afterlife or whatever. I don't know if they actually
you gotta hang
thought
out
of
with
heaven.
Osiris.
We were mostly vying for the case that was kind of where the fork in the road began of dice becoming less about, you know, divination and a little bit more about gaming, or even how those two things crossed over. But I had a story that I omitted from the original script that points back towards divination and just how like there's kind of like a supernatural connotation in dice in ancient Egypt altogether because of the impact in their theology. So I am going to talk about the god Thoth. Thoth? Thoth. It's T-H-O-T-H. So I'm saying it now. You say it at home listening. You tell me who's saying it right.
Can I have a cafe Americano? No Thoth.
No Thoth. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Just making fun of a religion now. Okay. After I just got done talking about fucking Jesus, the clothes and stuff.
Oh, I'll throw a shade at ancient Egyptian all day.
I'm sure there's people that still practice.
There probably is.
Yeah, they're going
to
fucking.
And I hope they're devout listeners to this podcast.
They're
going to
fucking kill you. And I'm going to help them.
Are they? Oh, really? They're going to kill me? Are they going to chop me up into like 37 pieces and scatter me across the globe like Osiris was in their religion. Yeah, try it. Come at me.
Okay, anyway. So dice were commonly associated as tools used by the ibis-headed god Thoth, the inventor of magic, writing and science, the divine arbiter and judge of the dead, and the maintainer of the universe. So pretty important guy, and he was constantly attributed with having dice. Because of Thoth, dice are actually directly responsible for every human's perception of the universe to this day. So Shu's the son of the god Ra. Everyone knows who Ra is. Shu's his son. Shu reigned as king of Egypt for many years, and when Shu's daughter Nut fell in love with a different god, Jeb, Shu was jealous, which is kind of gross because that's his daughter, so what the fuck. So to keep these lovers far apart, I'm pretty sure that Shu turned Nut, his daughter, into the sky and Jeb, the lover, into the earth. And on top of that, Shu cursed Nut, his daughter, with the curse of infertility, proclaiming that there were no months, and this is where like language gets very important in this curse, proclaiming that there were no months of the year in which she could ever give birth. Like, no days on the year, on the calendar, she could give birth. Thoth heard this, and he took pity on Nut and Jeb because he's just a pretty cool guy. And so he challenged the reigning gods, I guess Ra and some others, to a game of dice and soundly beat them all. As his prize, he asked the gods to give him 5 extra days of the year in addition to those that already exist. Thoth, in turn, presented the 5 extra days to Nut, the new sky goddess, because these 5 extra days did not belong to any particular month. They did not fall under Shu's original curse. Thus, the goddess was then able to produce 5 children, and Osiris, which you mentioned, was one of them. Isis is another one as well. Not like bad beheading Isis, the god Isis. So prior to Thoth's gift, I don't know how many of you people knew this listening at home, but the Egyptian calendar had 12 months, 30 days each, and resulted in a 360-day year. So those 5 extra days is what made the year that we practice now 365 days, which we still practice to today.
Oh.
So Thoth made the calendar what it is today, that regardless of your religion or connection or affinity for ancient Egyptian mythology, whether you like it or not, that's where we get the 365 days from. Because Thoth won a game of dice. He played craps in an alley against Ra and won.
So he was the Archie Karras of
you could say ancient that. Egyptian. You could say that.
Yeah.
Except he ended on a high note. He ended real high. Whereas Archie is doing questionable things on a cruise ship somewhere off the coast of Oregon for food.
He's just hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giving interviews.
You could definitely say he's hanging out. Yeah.
That's it, everybody. We've got one more thing.
This is about the blood?
Yeah.
Well, what time? How are we on time?
We're at 56.
How about we save it for next 30 bits?
Listen, Sam, we talked about something. It's a little bone that I have to pick with you.
Was this on the last 30 bits?
Yeah. You know what?
Ate blood off of your kitchen floor at your last apartment.
I wouldn't.
Two apartments ago.
Eating it is a big jump.
You ate your roommate's old blood. You woke up to your roommate's blood on the floor. I texted you to not eat it, and you were like, you know what? I'm gonna put that shit on some spaghetti, and I'm gonna go to Flavortown.
I wish that's what I did. I wish I was the
no, it's worse. Here. You got a spoon and you ate it.
No, listen.
No.
There's
we're
a
gonna,
whole chain of
we're
thoughts.
Gonna do this next Dirty Bits because we ran out of time, okay? Find us on Instagram at InfoCast5000.
Email me at InfoCast5000@gmail.com. I'll be on there lurking around.
You can email him with like a topic you would like us to cover.
Yeah, or just talk to me.
Or just, yeah.
I'm fun to talk to most of the time.
Yeah, until you ghost him.
Okay. I might ghost you. Okay. Don't try to get emotionally attached.
You know? Well, you'll get emotionally attached first. Okay, bye.
Bye.